Welcome to the HealthLinks podcast, a service of the HealthLinks family of services. I'm your host, DJ Thatcher. Our mission here is to engage in conversations about the medical and wellness landscape of South Carolina so that we're all better informed. In this episode, we're coming to you from the Sports Medicine and Orthopedic Centers based in Mount Pleasant. We're joined by Dr. Blake Olson, an orthopedic surgeon. Dr. Olson, welcome to the HealthLinks podcast.
Thanks. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Now, we have highlighted orthopedic specialists in the past about various things. And of course, like anything else, the technology is changing all of the time. Dr. Olson, give us a snapshot of your practice here. First of all, the types of cases that you see, maybe a little bit about your background, and then we'll pivot to some of the newest technology that you're using.
All right, so we're a small practice that's located in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. Myself and my partner, Dr. Shane Wolf, we are both board certified orthopedic surgeons. We've both been in Charleston, I want to say, since about 2007, when each of us finished our fellowship. He's a sports medicine specialist. My fellowship is in foot and ankle reconstruction. We handle a variety of orthopedic problems, everything from pediatric-related issues to adults, geriatric population, general orthopedics, conditions such as arthritis or fractures, or, you know, problems that require reconstruction. And then we have a whole nother part of the practice that has become very important to us, which is the regenerative component.
So Dr. Olson, obviously you are an orthopedic surgeon, and so patients will go to a surgeon and they'll think, well, they're going to recommend surgery. That's not always the case though, is it?
No, as orthopedic surgeons, we spend an exorbitant amount of our training learning how to operate. And that does occupy a significant portion of our practice. However, there is a place for conservative care, and we spend a lot of time with our patients, giving them options for conservative treatment. And surgery certainly is indicated at certain times. However, we try to take advantage of conservative modalities as much as possible. There's a lot of reasons for which patients may be apprehensive about pursuing surgery. You know, some patients are scared of, you know, having an operation. Just inherently having an operation. So also patients have concerns regarding anesthesia. Then there's the cost associated with surgery. There's also the time off from a person's occupation, the time off they have to take, especially in the elderly population, if they're looking to travel, if there's any issues regarding supportive care at home. So we take as much time as we can to evaluate the problem and then determine whether we have conservative treatment available before we make any recommendation for surgery.
Sure. You've got a great website. And interestingly, one of the first things you notice there at the top of the page is not, we can operate on you, which I guess people assume, but it's all about these orthobiologics. And I have a print up here of what a lot of that is. It's talking about the natural substances that are used to treat many of these conditions. Tell us a bit about that, because that probably separates you from a lot of other practices, I would imagine.
So so I came to Charleston in 2007, and one of the things that I started doing in my fellowship was the use of bone marrow. Bone marrow as it was applied in the operating room. We'd use it often for difficult cases, such as complex reconstructions or fractures that were having difficulty healing. We would concentrate that bone marrow and take advantage of what we call cellular technology, and then we'd apply it in the operating room. Well, one of the coolest things in orthopedics that a lot of research has taken place in the past few years is adapting the use of orthobiologics such as bone marrow to an office-based practice. So a lot of those things that were restricted to just doing in the operating room, we can do in the office now.
And this is the patient's own bone marrow and cells and that sort of thing, is that correct?
Right. So there's a few different types of biologics. I think it's important to set the record straight. The fundamental one that I think a lot of patients have heard the most of is called platelet-rich plasma. Mm-hmm. That is not a cellular therapy. That refers to taking a venous blood draw, very similar to when you'd get your blood drawn by your primary care physician to have lab tests done. And then we take a sample of blood, and then we place it into a centrifuge. We spin it, and we separate out its various components. So we take whole blood, and we divide it up into essentially three different layers. One is plasma. The second one is called buffy coat, which contains white blood cells and platelets. And then the bottom layer is blood. what we're looking for is that middle layer, that buffy coat, which is rich in platelets. We found that there are potentially a lot of benefits with that, and the technique has certainly been refined over the years to make it better. And then we use that to apply to a host of orthopedic conditions, whether it be an arthritic joint, whether it be a tendon injury, whether it be a chronic condition that's not responding to traditional conservative management. So that's the baseline treatment. The next step up we get into is what's known as cellular therapy. The FDA has outlined very specific rules regarding what you can and can't do. The two types of cellular therapy that are FDA approved that we are permitted to use include fat, what we call microfat, and the other one is bone marrow, concentrated bone marrow. Those are two types of cellular therapy that we're able to harvest from a patient. And the rules state by the FDA, it has to be autologous, meaning it has to come from the patient. We harvest it on the spot. It has to be minimally manipulated, meaning we can centrifuge it and separate it out. We can wash it and clean it. And then as soon as we've done whatever we're going to do, which is considered minimally manipulated, we then place it back into the patient, into that damaged tissue.
Hmm. Yeah. Now, a fair number of the people that that watch these podcasts are medical people who might be referring to you. Speak to them for just a moment about what types of patients they might want to refer to you for this therapy.
So there's a host of conditions that we use for orthobiologics. In fact, it's getting to the point now where there's very few things that orthobiologics may not have some role in. Mm-hmm. We treat a variety of chronic conditions such as arthritis, which essentially refers to a joint that has cartilage damage in it. We use it for tendon problems such as Achilles tendonitis. We also use it for rotator cuff problems. We'll use it sometimes for partial tears of the rotator cuff. And then we'll also sometimes use it for fractures or fractures that are having difficulty healing. So there's a host. And so the determination of what type you use is based upon the type of pathology you use. In general, PRP is more widespread. The cellular technologies such as fat and bone marrow are usually used for some of the more severe forms of pathology. So if a patient has low-grade arthritis, we may apply PRP. But if a person comes in with more advanced arthritis, then they're not interested yet in having a knee replacement, we may consider either using microfat or using concentrated bone marrow.
So for the lay public that's watching, they might think, hey, this sounds great. I don't have to undergo surgery, perhaps. But is it covered? You know, whether it's Medicare, Medicaid, insurance, what are you finding from that standpoint?
So the vast majority of them are not covered by insurance. We try to set our prices at a point which are manageable for patients, taking consideration the amount it costs for materials and for the use of the staff. With that said, if you take a side-by-side comparison for, let's say, a joint replacement or some of the reconstruction, it's actually substantially less. And one of the biggest cost savings factors in the whole equation is the fact there's no time off. So a patient doesn't have to be off work. They can come in and within 15, 20 minutes, we can take a sample of bone marrow, we can concentrate it, inject it back into a patient, and in most cases, they can go back to their activities the next day.
Wow, that's a big change. So I'm thinking of a typical problem, a rotator cuff, you mentioned that, rotator cuff tear, that sort of thing. Going back a few years ago, the only treatment for that, I guess there could be conservative treatment without surgery. The surgery for that, though, could put someone into rehab for quite a while, couldn't it?
Definitely. I mean, a rotator cuff repair, there's often a patient undergoes a rotator cuff repair. There'll be a period of immobilization in a sling, followed by, a period of extensive physical therapy, mm-hmm. and then several months, sometimes 6 months to a year before, they've plateaued with respect to their treatment. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important that a provider that is offering this, and this, I think, is one of the advantages of our practice, we have a sense of what the surgery involves, what the recovery involves, when the surgery is most appropriate, and when it's appropriate to consider using a biologic. I think that's one of the most important things when developing a relationship with a patient that's considering this, is to give them a sense of, you got this much of a chance of getting a win as opposed to going to the operating room.
Wow.
And I think that that's been one of the advantages of being orthopedic surgeons and using this type of technology, is that we're also able to take a patient through the whole experience. So we can take them through some of the traditional conservative care, such as physical therapy, providing them exercises, or use of anti-inflammatory medications. The next step up, you know, we can talk to them about surgery, what's involved, or, you know, we can coordinate with the physical therapist to take them through a physical therapy program. Or if a biologic is appropriate, we can talk to them about the various options and when it's appropriate to consider one, and which one is most appropriate, and how long it takes to see a response, and what the backup is if it doesn't work. And we have the ability to then take them through the surgical experience as well if it comes down to that.
That's terrific. So it's from start to finish, you can treat them. I'm just curious how these biologics really work internally versus surgery. Let's go back to the example of the rotator cuff injury. What's actually happening inside that these biologics are fixing?
So there's a lot of mystery surrounding that, and mm-hmm. we certainly have learned a lot. And there's different mechanisms for which we think that use of platelet-rich plasma versus cellular therapy, such as bone marrow and the use of microfat, have their benefit. You know, platelets, for example, there's a number of inflammatory mediators that they secrete, and also types of proteins that may help mitigate a healing reaction. So it has an influence on the tendon. There's been some really good studies actually showing when you do a rotator cuff surgery applying platelet-rich plasma that some of the outcomes are far superior than just doing the rotator cuff surgery alone. You know, taking a step back in the office for a partial thickness rotator cuff tear, we'll use, you know, platelet-rich plasma, but there's a few points to take into consideration. I think a few years ago, it was a bit more of the Wild West. We didn't quite understand exactly what we were doing. We didn't know how much blood you draw. You know, how long do you spend it in a centrifuge? What portion of whole blood are you trying to concentrate? And, you know, what does the sample look like that's considered to be a good PRP sample? And what we know, the latest studies coming out now have to do with the volume and the concentration. And when you multiply those two figures together, you get platelet count. And we're finding that that seems to be the single most important factor when determining the effectiveness of PRP. We want to maximize the platelet count. And so it's important that whatever physician is providing this has a system that has an adequate platelet recovery percentage, and that system has been vetted to show that it is capable of producing above a certain threshold of platelets. That's extremely important. So for example, the system that I was using 6 or 7 years ago, you know, concentrated down to a maximum of 2.5 billion platelets. Well, there's studies that have come out since then, a meta-analysis showing if you look at all these studies over the past 10 years using PRP, that if you fail to get above 3.5 billion platelets, you find that the effectiveness dramatically goes down. So the newer systems, for example, the one we're using has a 70% platelet recovery percentage, and we can yield approximately 10 billion platelets per sample. And we know that you can't have too many platelets, but you can have too few.
There will be a quiz at the end. But no, this is interesting. It really is. You're telling me about this one patient that really stood out to you. She had an arm injury, and walk us through that. What was her story?
So we have a patient. She's a 63-year-old female, extremely active, takes very good care of herself. She enjoys surfing. She enjoys power yoga. And she's been dealing with a shoulder problem for a number of years. She has significant arthritis. However, because of her activity level, she is not interested at this point and her age of undergoing a shoulder replacement. And so she came to us to ask for any options we may have available. Based upon the grade of arthritis, we determined that PRP may help somewhat, but she was probably a better candidate for the cellular therapy. So what is it about the cellular therapy that makes it a tier above, you know, PRP? Well, in her case, we utilized bone marrow. So in the office, we aspirated or took a volume of 60 cc's of bone marrow from her pelvis. We know, for example, with bone marrow, one of the things that's unique about it is that it contains both mesenchymal and hematopoietic stem cells. So what are stem cells? They're naive cells, all right? They have not fully differentiated into a fully developed cell. So for example, hematopoietic cells, you may have a stem cell that's from that lineage that eventually goes on to be a white blood cell. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. You may have in the mesenchymal line, you know, one that goes on to be, you know, a fat cell or a bone cell. All right. So they can differentiate. They go down the line. So we take them when they're immature, and there used to be a thought, well, okay, they become whatever cell that you tissue you injected into. And we found that's not the case. What the case is, it has primarily to do with the types of proteins that these cells secrete. There's still a lot of unknowns, but we do know it's safe. It's been done for a few decades, and there are over 30 published studies that have shown that it has an excellent safety profile. So you can't, by the FDA's definition, call it stem cell therapy. However, it is one of two ways. Fat and bone marrow are the two ways that you do get stem cells. With fat, you get what we call mesenchymal stem cells. And with bone marrow, you get hematopoietic stem cells and you get mesenchymal stem cells. And we know that if you centrifuge these at a certain speed, that you can isolate them in the middle, and then we can harvest them, and then we can inject them into the damaged tissue. So in her case, we harvested 60 cc's, and we know, for example, there's certain things that we didn't know 10 years ago that we know now. So for example, there's a huge difference between taking bone marrow from the femur bone or the tibia bone versus the pelvis. We know that you can get, you know, at least twice as many stem cells from the pelvis. Hmm. So we also know, this is strangely enough, which I didn't even know 5 years ago, if you harvest the sample with a 60 cc, a bigger syringe, okay, versus another person that harvests with 6 10 cc syringes, you can get three times as many stem cells with the guy that uses the smaller syringes because of the pressure that comes back on the syringe. So it's little things like this that we've taken a deep dive into regenerative medicine to understand how can we maximize this technology and when is it best to use it. So in her case, we harvested 60 cc's of bone marrow. We centrifuged it. We isolated the cells, which is in what we call that middle layer, the buffy coat layer, and then using ultrasound guidance, all of our injections are done using ultrasound guidance to maximize accuracy. We injected that into the shoulder joint. She came in 6 weeks later and said, 70% better, hasn't felt this good in years. So that was a big win for us. Now, the next question is, how long does it last? Well, that's a little bit of a mystery. All right, so, you know, in some patients that were doing the fat injections for knee arthritis, if they have moderate arthritis, you can see anywhere from 2 up to 5 years of relief from a single injection. So there is certainly benefit, you know. So how long that lasts, I think it's based upon, and to some degree, the health of the host or the health of the patient. Mm-hmm. And it's probably also based upon how much damage we find in that area. So probably the more damage you do, the more variable the expectations are going to be.
Any issue with a patient who's received this type of therapy, then years later requires surgery? Is it the same as if they never had the therapy, or what are your findings there?
So that's one of the other benefits associated with any of the regenerative technologies is that this is coming from your own body. And so there are no associated problems with having a surgery, for example, you know, even let's just say a year later or 6 months later you had a surgery. There is no problem with undergoing that surgical procedure if you've undergone any of the regenerative methods that I've talked about.
Terrific. And again, I saw your office here. In fact, we'll show you some of the tools you were talking about. Everything can be done right here as an outpatient, including the pelvic withdrawal of bone marrow and that sort of thing. Is that very painful, by the way?
So yeah, so it's a great question. It's probably one of the most common questions I get.
Sure.
Is there discomfort associated with it? So what I'd say is probably the most uncomfortable portion of that procedure is not taking the bone marrow. It's the injection itself. This is a very different way of understanding an injection than we traditionally understand. When we think of an injection, usually we think of cortisone. Mm-hmm. Cortisone, you know, suppresses the immune response. It's an anti-inflammatory, all right? And so cortisone also, you know, gives more of a quicker relief response, but it's often, in most cases, a temporizing measure. It doesn't last. There's also some potential issues we're seeing with the use of steroids. So, for example, we see the breakdown of cartilage. We see the atrophy of tissues. In fact, in a knee replacement, if you have a cortisone injection, you have to wait 3 months before you have a knee replacement because the risk of infection goes up. Mm-hmm. This is not the case with the regenerative technology. It's a much different way of thinking about injection. There is not the immediate response. It does take some time. So when you do a PRP injection, it can take anywhere from 4 to 12 weeks to see maximum benefit. And in a lot of patients, we see the length of time that it's sustainable as opposed to temporizing measure. It's not necessarily going to last forever. We have patients, however, that have undergone the microfat, you know, a year out, and they still feel great. Wow. It's very rare for me to see a cortisone injection do something like that. And on top of that, a couple of the proteins that we're seeing in bone marrow, for example, there's what's called the IRAP protein, which is the IL-1 receptor antagonist protein, and there's another one called alpha-2 macroglobulin. The latter, the alpha-2 macroglobulin, there's been some research to show that it slows the progression of arthritis or disease.
Wow, really interesting. So, all right, so Dr. Olson, we've got some of the tools that you use here in the office. Let's say I'm coming in and I'm donating some of my own biologics. What is this device that we're seeing here?
So this is the company that we use for harvesting both platelet-rich plasma and also bone marrow. And this particular system is known as the PLUS system. And this is probably the latest version of what we're doing with PRP that has changed over the past. You good? This is the latest version. This is made by a company called Selling Biosciences. And this is the latest version of technology for harvesting PRP. There are a few differences, and we use this system both for harvesting both platelet-rich plasma, which is venous blood, which is a standard blood draw, and also bone marrow. The system for bone marrow looks almost identical. So you have a series of syringes that are used for a couple purposes. So first off, this one here is, for example, will harvest a sample of blood from a patient or bone marrow, and then it is placed into this port, which then gives us blood, whole blood, down to this chamber, okay? And then this is then placed into a centrifuge, and it's centrifuged for 15 minutes at a certain speed. And once it comes out, you'll see it divided into its various layers. You'll see a clear straw-colored fluid, which is what we call the platelet-poor plasma, on top. You'll see a very fine cloudy layer. It looks like smoke, which is the buffy coat, right? That contains the PRP, platelet-rich plasma. And then the bottom, you'll see red blood cells. So the way that this works is, this is a lever here, which you can see what it goes between filter and draw. So we'll switch it to draw. We'll pull back on this, and then the straw-colored fluid will come into the syringe, okay? And traditionally, with some of the older PRP systems, you would then discard this. All right, this is gone. All right, with the newer PRP systems, we're finding a lot of use for platelet-poor plasma, and that we can concentrate this in, and we can get some of those newer proteins we're finding benefit with. Like I talked about, that what's called the IRAP protein, or alpha-2 macroglobulin, which seems to have a significant benefit. So once we've taken off the plasma, we then have a wheel here that we lower down, and this gets us down into the buffy coat. And then after we've taken this here, which is the platelet-poor plasma, it's transferred to this side, okay? And then very quickly, we do a quick draw, okay? And that pulls off the buffy coat. That pulls off our platelets. Hmm. Right? And then we have our platelets. On the side here, you see this. This is a vac-lock syringe, mm-hmm. right? There's a vacuum in here. And if we look on the back, you see these are a series of filters, all right? And mm-hmm. so then once we set our platelet-rich plasma aside, we then take the platelet-poor plasma, that clear coat, and then through using these filters, this filter that's back here, we transfer this back and forth, and through here you'll see pure water come out from the patient's plasma.
Okay.
And it's crystal clear, and it filters out the water. And gradually over time, it gets more concentrated. Then we take that concentrated protein solution, we mix it with our PRP, and that's what's used to place back in the patient. And we do that both for bone marrow as well as for our PRP injections.
Okay.
So this is the latest version that we're finding benefit with. And like I said, this system is just all self-contained. It's very safe to use in the office.
Patients come in, they get a 60 cc draw of venous blood or of bone marrow, and then it's processed. Mm-hmm. Everything's processed in this one little system here.
Wow.
And that gives us our sample, and that's what we use. And then this device here is an ultrasound device. This is where ultrasound has gone. It's not necessarily quite as accurate as some of the more expensive, bigger ultrasounds. We were talking a little bit about this before, but this allows us to link up to an iPad, and then we can do an ultrasound-guided injection right in the office of the patient.
Terrific. All compact, all disposable, very safe.
Very safe. It's a closed unit, okay? And so everything is just contained right in here. And in the end, and then we can control the volume. So that's one of the best things about it is that if I have a smaller joint, like a toe joint that I'm doing, I can adjust the filtration down so that the volume gets smaller and more concentrated. If, for example, I have a patient that comes in that, let's say, has, maybe they have a rotator cuff and maybe they have the joint itself, or maybe a rotator cuff and the biceps tendon, we can have this a little more dilute because we're all the way up at 10 billion platelets. So we have a little wiggle room, right? And we can give ourselves a bigger volume. So with one system, we can do multiple injections.
Wow. Well, Dr. Olson, this is very interesting, obviously cutting edge. How widespread is this treatment option now? What percentage of orthopedic practices have this, that sort of thing?
So my experience with orthopedic practices, it depends on which of the regenerative technologies you're talking about. So I think I see a fair number of orthopedic practices in town that are utilizing PRP. I found also some non-orthopedic practices that are utilizing PRP as well. I think one of the things that I found, though, when we started doing a deep dive of this and starting to attend some of the conferences on the national leaders that are kind of leading the way to develop this technology, is that there's a lot of variability on the PRP systems. So when we decided to take on this as a significant portion of our practice, we did a deep dive in trying to understand what are the best PRP systems. And like I said, I can just tell you that from our standpoint, we found that by taking the systems that allow us to harvest the highest number of platelets and also offering some of the other cellular technologies such as bone marrow and fat, and the latter two, I haven't seen it too many orthopedic practices. I think there's maybe one or two other providers in town that are doing it. There's a little bit more of a learning curve for doing bone marrow in the office and also harvesting fat. And, we just decided to switch gears and we found this to be extremely interesting and useful to patients. And so we've spent the past 2 years really trying to cultivate the regenerative component of orthopedics because we think it has a lot to offer. And I think that over time it's going to get even better.
And for our listeners who are potential patients, and certainly for providers as well, what's the best way to get a hold of you here at Sports Medicine and Orthopedic Centers?
So we're located here in Mount Pleasant at 1230 Hospital Drive. We're right across from the old East Cooper Hospital, which is now Vibra. Our phone number is 843-473-4331, and our website is smocsc.com.
And of course, we'll have that on below the screen here as well. Dr. Blake Olson, thank you so much for joining us here on the HealthLinks podcast.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for this episode. Remember, the HealthLinks podcast is presented by the HealthLinks family of services. And to gain access to anything related to HealthLinks South Carolina, check out our website at healthlinkssc.com. And to listen to any of our nearly 100 podcasts, hey, simply put a /podcast in front of that website. You can check those out as well. And to reach me directly, perhaps for comments about our guests or maybe suggestions for future podcasts, love to hear from you. You reach me directly at host@healthlinkssc.com. Once again, I'm DJ Thatcher. Thank you for joining.